So this past weekend, I was talking to beloved host and friend of the show, MJ Cohen, and we were discussing where to go eat after our club baseball game, and one of the options that was floated was Chipotle. Now, we did not end up going there, but we got into a brief argument about the which ways are appropriate to and to not refer to said Mexican grill. So I started with Otle. What are our thoughts on Otle?
It's terrible.
Terrible?
That might be what...
That's Otle? Pretty bad.
That's pretty bad. Oh my goodness.
And then MJ said that Chip was more appropriate.
Okay, but who would even know what you're talking about? Like, if you said, let's go to Chip.
Why
I'm gonna
be this
like,
a conversation
what is that?
To begin with, bro?
Like, how many...
Wait, y'all play on the club baseball team?
Yes, we do.
Dang, all right.
And then he clarified Chip with Chippers.
No,
that's
no.
even worse.
This is
that's
a,
worse.
This is a rice
he unironically claimed that people said Chippers.
Bro,
to refer to Chipotle.
Leave my darling Chipotle alone, man. Leave him alone. Chipotle works better than any of those three.
That's what I was saying. I feel like I've heard that before, but apparently I'm the only one who says that.
I mean, I think Chipotle is better than Otle.
Oh, really?
How about Chipotle's better than all of them?
That you might be onto
something
there.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, Chipotle may charge for extras, but we've got a whole hour for you right here on KTRU 96.1 FM. So let's roll the music and talk some ball.
This is KTRU on 96.1 KTRU LP Houston and streaming live on your phone and on the web at ktru.org. Back to you, Ian.
Good morning, Houston. I'm Ian Kleppinger, and welcome back to Against the Grain on KTRU 96.1 FM in our brand new KTRU podcast studio. Shout out the GOAT Connor for hooking us up. This is the Rice University student-run radio show where we break down everything going on in the world of Rice athletics and the broader sports scene from across the city of Houston. You can listen to us every Saturday bright and early at 7 a.m. right here on KTRU 96.1 FM, or stream all of our episodes anytime on iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Amazon Music. To stay in the loop, make sure to follow us on both Instagram and TikTok. We will be kicking off our KTRU Sports Hour with Around the Hedges here at Rice University. It is common to say that the greater city of Houston is beyond the hedges. So to start off each episode of Against the Grain, we go around the hedges for a quick review of the biggest sports moments of the past week from both Rice and the city of Houston. I realized in the past week or two that I had not given you guys an update on either of our basketball teams, so we're going to start there. After the men's team's dominant win over the College of Biblical Studies, which we did discuss on the show a few weeks ago, Rice has not been doing as well. They've dropped four of their five since then, though that included a close game to the potentially tournament Big Ten team, the Oregon Ducks, and a few not as close games to Stephen F. Austin, number 20 Tennessee, and last night Tarleton State. They moved to 2-4 on the year, but on the bright side, senior Prairie View A&M transfer Nick Anderson has dropped 19 and 18 points in the last two games, respectively, where the Owls kind of struggled with spotty, inconsistent offense overall. He has filled in and shown that he can take on the lead scorer role if needed, so we'll see if the Owls can surround him with better defense and get back on the right track. They are in action next week with several opportunities to do so at the Geico Coconut Hoops Tournament in Florida. I wish I was making that up. They will be taking on Kennesaw State, Florida Gulf Coast, and Oral Roberts, all of whom are mid-majors but have been in the tournament in the last 2 or 3 years. So some potentially tough mid-major matchups ahead for the Rice Owls men's team to get things turned around. The women have been doing a little better. They beat Middle Tennessee State last Saturday by a score of 66-59. Anaya Alexis was fulfilling our preseason forecast when she dropped 18 points and 10 rebounds for a dominant double-double. Then they came on the road at Princeton, came up short by a score of 69-56 this past Wednesday. Haley Adams led the team in scoring for the second time in four games so far this year against the Tigers of Princeton. Great to see her taking yet another step forward after a good year last year. The Rice women moved to 2-2 on the year. Their next home game is Sunday at 2 p.m. You can catch it at Tudor Fieldhouse or on ESPN+. Rice volleyball is the talk of the town. They are the number one seed in the American Athletic Conference tournament. That tournament is hosted by the South Florida Bulls in Tampa, Florida. Earlier Friday morning, the day we're recording this, they swept the number 8 seed UTSA Roadrunners and will go on to face the Wichita State Shockers, who beat number 4 North Texas immediately following that game. The championship match will be played on Sunday at 12 p.m. Central. That's 1 o'clock local time for the tournament. And Rice will be up against either 2 seed South Florida, who I think is the clear number 2 team in the conference, or one of Charlotte, FAU, and Tulsa if they are able to knock off the Shockers tomorrow morning. The hometown pro football team, the Houston Texans, got a somewhat surprising but very impressive win against the Buffalo Bills and Josh Allen last Thursday night by a score of 23-19. We, of course, have a breakdown for you on everything that went down. Jacob, why don't you get us started?
Yes, we saw a lot yesterday, including a Josh Allen disaster class that left many fantasy owners in shambles. We also got to see a General Mills 2-touchdown performance that may be overlooked. However, I would like to pass a question to the table. How was the offense able to click yesterday?
Thanks, Jacob. That's a trick question because the reality is it did not really, honestly. Woody Marks had, you know, a lot of rushing yards, and he's been very impressive in his rookie season to take over from Nick Chubb. Recently got news, actually, that Joe Mixon will not be playing this year. And what has been a very mysterious and confusing, like, injury saga for him. So it's good to see him perform. Jaden Higgins, rookie out of Iowa State, again, had, was the leading receiver in targets, I believe, and got himself a touchdown. That's a couple games in a row now with a touchdown. Nico Collins, quieter game. But honestly, like, you look at that game, and we'll talk, I'm sure, a lot about the defense, but it really was the defense that made the difference. Kaimi Fairbairn had a perfect kicking game, and Davis Mills just had to do what he had to do as the fill-in for CJ Stroud. So, yeah. Offense did a pretty decent job, but I would say they're far from the story last night.
Of course, certainly. Now begs the question, some casuals might be referring to Davis Mills as a viable option after 3-0 start. Is that just a ridiculous take?
Yes, it definitely is. I think most, if not all, Texans fans can agree that Davis Mills has done a great job of, like, getting our season back on track. 3-0 as a starter, and he has, like, a very bad losing record as a starter before CJ Stroud came in, by the way. So good for him to get 3 wins. But, you know, he hasn't been blowing anybody away. He's only had 1 pick in the last 3 games, so he's done well at, you know, keeping the ball, you know, away from the defense's hands, and he's just done what he needed to do. But he did start rough, you know, he did start the game rough yesterday, like, started 1-for-8, right? And, you know, not the most efficient of throwers, so it'll definitely be good to have CJ back on the 30th when we go up to Indy for a very big divisional matchup. Rachel, how do you feel about the Davis Mills and CJ Stroud quarterback controversy that people are wanting to force?
Yeah, so I think that Davis Mills is doing a great job in CJ Stroud's absence. He is really fulfilling that role of the backup QB, and I think that he is tending to just, again, play his role. He's playing it safe. He's not doing anything crazy. But he's keeping things under control. He's not panicking. Again, he's only thrown 1 interception, which is great. And I think one of the best things about Davis Mills is that he knows exactly what his role is. He's not trying to come out here and steal CJ Stroud's starting spot. He has talked again and again about how he can't wait for CJ to be back, and he's just trying to do the best he can while he is put into that role. So he's staying humble. He's staying, again, safe. And I think he's just doing what he needs to do.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know if anybody else watched the post game last night, but he and Will Anderson were brought on to talk to Richard Sherman, like the whole crew. And anytime they asked Davis Mills a question, he was just like, yeah, you know, just doing my job. You know, he's very, like, grounded. You can see not very well media trained, to be honest, either. But you, like Rachel, you were saying, you can tell that he knows his role in this team or on this team. And I saw someone online saying he's going to make a bag as a backup quarterback for the rest of his career, which I agree. Like, if you can do that as a backup, like, not make mistakes, you know, get your team wins when, you know, maybe they're not the most expected, then absolutely. But again, I don't think it's much of a controversy, especially, and I want to say this before we get into the next couple games too, because we play at Indy and then at Kansas City. Keep in mind, those are, I know the Chiefs have struggled this year, but, you know, those are 2 very tough games, whereas Davis Mills had to play, like, to be fair, like, a Jags team that has been doing well, and then But, like, the Titans and then, you know, got an impressive win last night. Like, I wouldn't use Davis Mills' like, 3-0 record as, like, you know, what should be defining, like, who should be starting at the quarterback position. But, honestly, I think we should be talking more about the defense. Like, Rachel, if you could take us through some of, like, the impressive statistics from last night as, you know, we have someone outside the studio making a bit of a ruckus. Let's dive into the defense, which was a story of the game.
No, yeah, the Texans defense was just absolutely phenomenal in this past game. And I mean, I think we've seen throughout the season that the Texans defense is really truly the selling point of this team. The defense is what is keeping this team, you know, potentially in playoff contention if they continue to win. But yeah, last night they had an insane game. 8 sacks, 2 interceptions, and a forced fumble. They only gave up 12 points to the Bills offense. And, you know, again, they're just really doing their job. They are keeping it down lock. And, like, Josh Allen was struggling this entire game. The defense was all over him. They forced him to make bad decisions. And even in those plays where maybe they didn't get a sack or an interception, like, they're just all over him. He has to rush. He has to make these decisions quicker than he is usually used to. And, again, yeah, the defense is truly just the selling point of this team, and they are outshining every other aspect of this team so far.
Yeah, that's that Texan swarm mentality that D'Amico Ryans has talked about ever since he got the head coaching job. It's, you can really see, like, when you interview the player, or when they've interviewed the players, or just, like, on social media, that, like, that swarm culture that he's built is something that really, like, is, like, something that they talk about every day. You know, it's definitely part of their team. I don't remember who said it, but they said that when all else fails, they can fall back on the swarm mentality and the swarm culture, which I think has been great for them. So I know I've been very critical of D'Amico Ryans and some sort of, like, game managing decisions, but can't deny that he's done a great job of building a culture and building that defense. I wanted to bring up some statistics to compare the Texans defense to some of the other historic defenses in the past and in recent memory, because, well, just this morning, Stephen A. Smith came out with a crazy take that the Texans could win the AFC. While I'm not sure that I'm exactly on that boat, even as a Texans fan, we still have a long way to go. I do think it's worth comparing, like, some of these stats to those historic defenses. Like, I mean, you have the insane ones, like the 2000 Ravens and the 85 Bears, where they were averaging, like, 12 points or less a game, like, 2 points something yards a carry, like, double digits in interceptions, like, upwards of 20, several Pro Bowlers, Ray Lewis, Defensive Player of the Year, and both teams won the Super Bowl. Like, you know, these are insane defensive statistics that are probably difficult to achieve in today's NFL, given, like, the way it's trended towards offense. But, like, you look at the 2000 Ravens, 85 Bears, 2013 Legion of Boom. These are all Super Bowl winning defenses that had, like, 4 Pro Bowlers at least, and were doing a great job at turning the ball over. The recent defense I want to compare us to is the 2015 Broncos no fly zone, which I'll just name their stats right now. They allowed 18.5 points per game, 14 picks, 22 forced fumbles, compared to the Texans, 16.5 points a game. So less points per game allowed, 12 interceptions already with several games to go, and 8 forced fumbles. So not as many forced fumbles, but in terms of points per game allowed and turning the ball over, they're at pretty similar levels. Texans have them beat on yards per game at 264 compared to 283. Both are first in the league. And then yards per play are a push at around 4.5. Broncos defense had 4 Pro Bowlers and went 12-4. Famously, you know, under the wing of Brock Osweiler before Peyton Manning came back and won them that Super Bowl. But as we know, Peyton Manning was quite pedestrian that season. So Texans now sit at 6-5, looking ahead at, you know, their toughest 2-game stretch of the season, arguably. Getting that win over the Bills was huge. And then after that, you know, they could just handle business and hopefully make it into the playoffs. Probably not winners of the AFC South. I think the Colts have a big enough lead where they will be able to hold on to that. But while I don't agree with Stephen A. Smith's take, I definitely see us, like, if we were to get in, like, I don't necessarily think teams would want to see us in the playoffs, because defense does do very well in January. And I'll be honest, we've had some good defenses in the past, like JJ Watt and some of these other guys, but this is probably the best defense I've seen, like, the Texans defense in my time as a fan, which is impressive. And it's really, you know, when we talk about the Pro Bowlers, like, threshold that some of these other teams met, I mean, I could look at Pro Bowlers all over, like, the defense. Like, Will Anderson and Daniil Hunter already at double-digit sacks each. Daniil Hunter at 11, Will Anderson at 10.5. Like, these are, probably the two best pass rushers, or the best pair of pass rushers for a team in the league. You have three guys who are all on course for 90-plus tackles. Derek Stingley and Kamari Lassiter are shut-down corners that are ball hawks. Kalen Bullock, second year out of USC, had a great game last night, three forced turnovers. And Jalen Petrie's been injured the last few weeks, but has three picks and five passes defended. So there's Pro Bowl talent all over the roster. So just comparing it to some of those past defenses, you have the playmakers to take your team far. All you need is for the offense to remain steady. And it can if, and this is my biggest stat from the night last night, zero sacks allowed from the O-line. We've been talking a lot about how the O-line has been a problem for the Texans, but recently they've allowed less sacks. And if C.J. Stroud can return from his concussion to an O-line that is allowing two sacks or less per game, I mean, the Texans could have a chance at causing some upsets, I think.
Now, let's put some outlook for the rest of the season. We know that the saying is defense wins championships. How big is this win for the Texans, and how does this affect, like, the reality of their playoff picture? Let's keep it realistic.
Yeah, I mean, again, this win last night was absolutely huge. I think, obviously, most people didn't expect us to win that game, and this is going to put a ton of momentum behind us. We do have two really tough games ahead of us. We're facing the Colts next and then the Chiefs. Getting a win against either of these teams, especially the Colts, would just be huge. So hopefully this win can really, you know, give us some momentum, and that defense can continue to do what they've been doing. If we can see them continue to swarm Patrick Mahomes, or, you know, just keep getting those interceptions, those turnovers. Maybe, you know, we've won six of our last eight games, and we can continue that streak. And again, I don't necessarily agree that we're going to win the AFC South, but, you know, maybe we can keep this energy going into potentially getting into the playoffs.
Yeah, last thought. I would actually circle that Chiefs game over the Colts one, just because the Colts are currently right behind us in the wild card seeding, and getting the tiebreaker over them would be huge, because especially since we're not in the running for the division, in my opinion, I think those wild card spots are more realistic. And it could be a rematch. You know, they could be looking at revenge from last year's playoffs when we lost up in KC in the divisional round. So Texans have quite the interesting season to look forward to. And so we'll see how they fare towards the end of the season as we move on to our first promo of the year and of the episode.
Flower.
Power. Hour.
Music as a form of free expression has carried the messages of protest, reform, and revolution for generations. Every week, Flower Power Hour takes a dive into how a different political or social movement was expressed through the music of its time. We'll explore everything from peaceful protest to violent calls to action, all in the name of change. Tune in every Thursday evening at midnight and ring in your weekend with the energy, anger, lamentation, and pride that constantly shifts our world. Hear it all on K-True's Flower.
Power.
Hour.
And with that, we are going to get into our sports brain rot for the day and transition from these more mature topics. We are going to evaluate some fantasy football trades. I am joined by Julian, Garrett, and Jacob to make fun of ourselves and our league mates. We are going to get started with a trade that I believe Julian and Garrett made with each other.
Yep, that is correct.
So Julian's team acquired Derrick Henry, Dak Prescott, and Rashee Rice. And Garrett's team acquired Saquon, Zay Flowers, and Matt Stafford. So what are our thoughts here? Our first reflections from the people who made the trade before the outsiders.
I think it's pretty fair, honestly.
I was going to say, I'm still happy with it. I'm sad that Rashee Rice has bloomed and blossomed the way he has for the Chiefs since returning. But at the time of making this trade, dude, there was no one that hated Derrick Henry more than me on the entire face of the earth.
Yeah, he was scoring like single-digit points like each week.
It looked like there was no light at the end of the tunnel, so I was doing anything in my power to get off of him.
But low-key, Saquon's kind of doing that now, though, no?
No, but like people were saying Saquon disappointed this year, but Saquon disappointing was like averaging 15 a game. Derrick Henry disappointing was him dropping 30 week one and then dropping 6, 4, 6. Like, he was
awful at the start of the season.
As a Derrick Henry owner, I must say it does pain me to have a Derrick Henry on my team.
Well,
it truly does, you know, hurt your opportunities to make the playoffs. And but I do still have hope, and I'm not much of a trading person myself, and I, you know, it's working out for me. It's working out for me. You know,
get this guy out of here.
Yeah, you didn't even make the trade, little bro.
I was my logic when I made the trade was like, okay, so my number one receiver at the time I think was like Chris Godwin, who hasn't played.
Mm.
So I really wanted a number one guy, and Rashee Rice had I think maybe a game or two left on his suspension. So I thought, the Chiefs offense is humming. When he comes back, gotta hope that, you know, he like seamlessly fits back in. And then for the Saquon and Derrick Henry trade, I was like, Saquon is underperforming as it is. So like, I doubt Derrick Henry will continue having these like stinkers, right? Like at worst, he'll just average like 12 or 13, which is what Saquon has given me anyway. And then the upside of Rashid just gives me an upgrade at receiver. And then Stafford for Dak, I think, was just like...
That was like neutral at the time, but now in retrospect, it looks like the Stafford
for sure
is much better.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So as a Saquon owner, he was decent, but now he's recently had several... Like in the last 5 weeks, he's had several single-digit stinkers.
He's had that 33-point game.
He had a stinker or two, but he also had a couple big games.
Yeah,
he's kind of been all over the place. So let's talk about the trade where I acquired Saquon. No, I traded away Saquon. I'm so sorry.
Nice.
I traded away Tyreek Hill, Michael Penix, Saquon, and Braylon Allen in exchange for Jacoby Myers, Chuba Hubbard, Drake London, and Trey Benson.
Holy mid, bro.
Yeah,
this
was a mid off of a trade, man.
Basically, what, Tyreek for... Or no, sorry, Saquon and Tyreek for Drake London, basically.
And Jacoby Myers, Trey Benson.
And Trey Benson, sure. At this point...
At this point, Chuba was the lead back.
So you got
Benson. Chuba was the lead back.
Was
so
Benson
it looks
lead
good
back
there
at this point?
I think
I got Rico on waivers. So the
oh,
Carolina
wow
back.
Oh, so it worked
continued
out perfect.
So
for
it
yeah
worked out really well for me. Like low key better than
also
with
Tyreek Hill going out for the year and Saquon not really improving too much. I think you ended up winning that trade. I think
I was really down bad for running backs at the time. Like I had Saquon and like Tyrone Tracy, and that was it. And Tyrone Tracy was hurt, which is why I like made it like for two like passable running backs.
Interesting.
Like that was kind of the logic. I was a little desperate.
Honestly, that's not awful.
I kind of
even at the time.
Yeah, I feel like that makes a lot of sense for you. From the other person's perspective too, I can see why they'd want to do this. Of getting Tyreek. This was like a buy low probably because he didn't have a great first couple weeks.
Yeah.
Penix was looking good at the start of the year too, I think.
Well, I remember I think Penix was just kind of like a who are you going to drop on waivers to make the trade happen? So just
oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So Penix and Braylon Allen were like a little bit irrelevant.
Sometimes you just need like sweeteners in there to just, you know, round out the trade. I don't like making trades where like it has to be like an even amount of players for like, so it's 3-for-3, 4-for-4, not like 4-for-2, 4-for-3. I don't like doing that nonsense.
Well, speaking of 4-for-4 trades, let's talk about another one from, I believe, one of Gary and Julian's leagues. So Julian's team acquired Drake May, Jamar Chase, Emeka Egbuka, and Jordan Mason. And this other person's team, who I don't know, acquired Daniel Jones, Elik Iomanar, the Texans, Titans receiver, BTJ, and Saquon.
Yeah, I fleeced him, bro.
TJ, what are you
this
doing?
This is just not even a competition. It's from stealing candy from a baby.
TJ, I will be telling you to listen to this episode so you can hear the slander for yourself.
This is bad.
Man, I do not know. Well,
this is tough.
In essence here, our friend TJ acquired BTJ and Saquon and gave up Drake May, who's top three QB on the year,
Number one. Jamar Chase,
top three receiver on the year, and Egbuka, top 10 receiver on the year.
Yeah, and Jordan Mason, who was a starter for like five of those weeks before Aaron Jones.
And has definitely produced more than Iomanor, however you say the dude's name.
Yeah, Iomanor did nothing.
He's a waiver wire guy. Daniel Jones has been the only good, consistent performer in that
trade.
But
Drake May is still probably better than him from a fantasy
perspective. Oh, yeah. Literally at like every slot here, TJ loses this trade.
Drake May beats Daniel Jones.
These three guys
Jamar
at the top
are way better than
are carrying my team still. Like, I'm still 3-8, to be fair, but... Like,
but he's doing the punishment.
Yeah,
but
okay.
He's got a better team now.
Yeah, like Drake May, Jamar Chase, Egbuka, and now Rashee Rice, who came back. Like, I should have a better team, or like I should have a better record because of the team. But I guess that's the
it's
way the cookie crumbles.
3-8 with this.
Yeah, honestly,
yeah, it's kind of crazy. You're 3-8 when this was like 2 weeks into the year, and you acquire Egbuka.
Yeah, had like several 30-point games.
What does the rest of your team look like?
Tone at the top.
I actually
I picked up Rico Dowdle on waivers. And I have Chase Brown.
We will come back to Julian's team in a minute. We're going to talk about his whole draft, oust him on air. But first, I want to talk about one more fleece potentially from that league.
Oh, no.
Neither of these teams have names listed. But Team A acquired Keenan Allen, Ramondre Stevenson, and Dylan Sampson. And Team B acquired Travion Henderson, Jordan Addison, and Ladd McConkey.
Okay, so in what world are we actually going to consider this trade a trade?
I'm not going to say
absolute robbery.
I'm not going to say hear me out because it's terrible. I was coping. Keenan Allen has fooled me several times, making me the fool.
Oh, wait, that was you.
Yeah,
yes, this was Julian.
I acquired Keenan Allen, Ramondre Stevenson, and Dylan Sampson
for
three fantasy starters at this point in the year. Ladd McConkey was doing so poorly, and I drafted him super highly, and I just thought, like, it was a trend because Justin Herbert, like, was going to be comfortable with Keenan back, but Ladd made his way back. Travion is finally getting, like, minutes and carries, and Jordan Addison has been a pretty consistent flex option.
Meanwhile, you got pretty much zero playable guys here.
I'm considering dropping Keenan to waivers.
Yeah.
Like, just out of rage.
Every Chargers receiver is just so inconsistent because there's like three or four of them who split the targets. Really,
I mean, Ladd has been consistent
except
since
Ladd,
like,
who I traded away, man.
Yeah.
I have Quentin Johnston in one league. And it's like, I feel like whenever I bench him, he drops 20, and whenever I start him, he gets like 2.
He's so frustrating, dude.
It's very hard to manage.
Yeah.
I had this problem with Calvin Ridley last year. But that was he was also just bad.
This is like Gabe Davis from 2 years ago, where he would rotate between getting either 0 or 15 plus.
Yeah. With our last couple minutes on this segment, I fear we should read off Julian's draft.
Yeah.
Dude, I love this segment. Let's just roast Julian's flag football performance.
Yeah, so
fantasy football. Both are roastable.
So
though,
keep in mind, I am now 2-9 in this league. My profile picture is Bam Knight because I went into a Monday night.
Son of it himself.
I went into Monday night football against, I don't remember who it was, but they were playing,
The Cowboys.
The Cowboys 32nd ranked rush defense, and he gave me 6 points, needing 9, and I lost, which was pretty heartbreaking. Funnily enough, somebody else picked up Bam Knight in a different league and played him against me last week. He scored 14 points and helped him get the narrow win against me. So just love the beauty of all this. Yeah, I drafted Saquon, BTJ, Ladd, who I traded away, Joe Burrow out for the year, Travion traded away, Zay Flowers traded away, TJ Hawkinson waivers, Bill Kroski Merritt traded away, but also waivers
now.
Tyrone Tracy injured for a lot of the year. Jordan Addison traded away. Chris Godwin injured. Jaden Higgins
might come back though. He's supposed to come back this week.
It's coming back this week. So. Yep. Jaden Higgins non-factor. Joe Mixon will not play this year. Tyler Loop. What are we doing? Patriots defense. Whatever.
Jake Ferguson in the 16th, dude. Your best pick of the draft.
Yeah, with Jake Ferguson.
Absolute steal. This is what teams
only,
are made out of right
him
here.
And Chris Godwin are the only players from this draft that I still have on my team.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a little poverty.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I was, I know.
You have had some bad injury luck, but
Garrett will know that that first month of the season, I was sending some heinous trades because I was.
Yes. I will say after this whole like thing shook out for Julian a couple weeks ago, he dropped to like 2-9 or something. He sent every single person in the league an offer of basically like his entire team for their worst player because he was so fed up.
I was raging so bad. I was so mad. I was so upset.
That's really, yeah.
Yeah, and now I'm on track to be last in both of my leagues, both with punishments, TBD.
Well,
so
we can't wait for Garrett to fill us in on what they make you do.
Might have to do an on-air punishment. On-air of some kind.
Punishment?
How can we harm your future job prospects?
Ooh. This is good. We will scheme and get back to you guys in the coming weeks with Julian's fate. But in the meantime, Julian is going to help us pivot to a different sport and discuss the Houston Rockets and the National Basketball Association. Julian, why don't you get us started?
Yeah, I might need to play fantasy in a different sport, honestly. But yeah, let's carry on to the NBA, where we're going to be talking some Rockets and general NBA, you know, just an NBA recap, you know, from our segment a few weeks ago. I have Garrett, Seth, and David here to discuss basketball with me. Boys, Rockets, recent big win against the Cavs, 10-1 since starting 0-2. We have star players all over the roster, you know. Some might say we're going to win the chip, best team in the history of the NBA. That's what the streets are saying, at least. So what do you all have to say about that?
I don't know about
all
that.
I don't know. let's not get too ahead of ourselves. But it has been a very exciting stretch, I will say. That win against the Cavs, very good. That's a good Cavs team, even though Darius Garland was not playing. DeAndre Hunter's a stud. Donovan Mitchell a stud. Evan Mobley looking amazing. And the Rockets kind of just took care of business. Like, there was a point in that game where the Cavs went on like a 20-5 run, and it seemed like they had all the momentum on their side. And the Rockets just did what the Rockets do, which is bear down on offense and say, you're not going to stop us. And they went to work.
Yeah, this is the number one rated defense, or number one rated offense in the league, excuse me.
Oh, and love that.
One of the big reasons for that has been obviously KD, the top guys, but Reed Shepard
Reed Shepard.
And he's right now shooting 47% from three on about six attempts a game. And he's just been able to provide this team with a look that they haven't really had before, because this team is just not a heavy three-point team. And so having that option out for them has just really opened up a lot of stuff for Amen, for Şengün, and especially for those double big lineups that they like to run.
Yeah, let me tee you up here, David, actually, because we talked about this at the start of the year when we were doing our little Rockets overview, and we were saying the biggest weakness for this team is going to be guard play. And if Reed Shepard develops, he could solve so many problems for the Rockets. He hasn't necessarily like solved all of their problems, although they still do have the first-ranked offense. But we see the leap. What is like causing this leap to happen versus last year, David, when he was virtually unplayable?
I think a biggest reason, he's just been able to take things one step at a time to be able to build his own confidence. And so last year, you had Udoka talking to him and telling him to just shoot the ball, just shoot the ball. And now that he's been able to just take that advice and run with it, having him see his three-pointers go in has allowed him to do some more stuff, just a little bit of dribbles here and there, getting a little bit closer to the basket, forcing the defense to act more upon what he's doing, which has led to, you know, other openings for KD, for Tari Eason, Amen Thompson.
Garrett's guy,
Love that man. Sorry.
But yeah, just like, it's been able to open up the offense in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and I mean, this is the guy he was in college. Like, Reed Shepard was drafted third overall because he could shoot the three, and that was kind of, like, about it. So even though 47%, probably not going to keep that up for the whole year, I think the Rockets can rely on him to be, like, a really good sharpshooter for the rest.
Yeah.
I can't lie. I don't think it's ridiculous to say he could keep it up for the rest of the year, because this is exactly what he shot in college from three. It was, like, 47%. Like, his shooting was unreal. And you look at, like, the quality of the shots he's taking. Like, they're not, like, just bad shots and he's getting lucky. Like, he's putting up good shots. I think another part of the reason he's, like, broken out this year is that KD has just taken so much, like, pressure off his shoulders from on the perimeter. Like, last year when Reed Shepard got the rock out there, it's like, okay, defenses are saying, who are we really worrying about? Are we worrying about the Jalen Green three ball? God, no. Were they as worried about the Şengün three ball? Not as much. Versus now this year, there's like a lot more space. Jabari Smith is also shooting amazing. And so it feels like Reed Shepard has a lot more room to operate, and he can kind of just be himself, and he's knocking down shots.
Yeah, can we talk about Jabari Smith? He's also made a bit of a leap, right? And a lot was made of the KD acquisition, not only for everything he could do as a player himself, but the way in which Jabari Smith would be able to sort of like learn from him. And, you know, they've got very similar builds, right? And just how is KD being there help Jabari Smith in this leap, do we think?
I feel like it's a confidence thing, honestly. And, like, when you look at the numbers, it doesn't seem like Jabari is, like, that much better than, like, last year or the year before or even his rookie year. Like, he's been pretty consistent. But when you watch him play, he just looks so confident with the shots he's taking. And that wasn't the same story from last year, even though he was still a solid three-point shooter. Like, there was a moment in the Cavs game the other night where Jabari, like, got the ball and was closed out on hard immediately. There was no sweat, no flinch, just stared the guy straight in his face and knocked down a three. Like, I feel like he has so much more confidence in himself and also his role this year. There's a lot more clarity if they know exactly what they want him to do, which is be a knockdown three-point shooter, make a couple plays in the post maybe, and then lock up on defense.
Yeah, really, this is a big credit to Udoka being able to bring such a strong culture and such a such a willing culture that opens itself up to guys being able to just step up and, like, if you're hot, you're hot.
Yes.
We're going to get you the ball. And so part of Udoka has just been experimenting. We saw a little bit earlier, or most of last year was him throwing Reed Shepherd into different scenarios to just be able to see, like, what can you do right now? What do we need out of you? And now that he has this extra year under his belt, he can really perform. And then when they need a different look, they can also go to a guy like Aaron Holiday.
Yes.
And I want to mention just how crucial Aaron Holiday has been in, again, being able to bring more three-point shooting and also just a little bit more playmaking that allows a lot of off-ball pressure from guys like KD, Jabari, Amen. And so you have both of these guys who can run out there with a huge lineup of, like, KD, Jabari, Şengün, and just be able to match up with teams both physically and on a jump shooting level.
Yeah. Can we check in on Amen Thompson, actually? So we've talked about how some of the younger guys have stepped up. We talk about him being, like, his athleticism, how much of an X factor he was for the team last year, especially in taking us to that 2 seed. How has he been performing this year? What's the outlook for him for the rest of the season? What's his role going to be on this team?
I fear the shooting leap is still not there.
Yeah.
When we first talked about the Rockets, I think they had only played like 2 or 3 games. And at that point, he had taken something like 15 threes without making one.
Yikes.
He's doing slightly better now, shooting a whopping 20% from three. And on, nice, like, a pretty strong volume too. So that is certainly not encouraging, especially for a team where, like, their only offensive weakness, I would say, is three-point volume. Like, that could just become a math problem for them in the playoffs. But everything outside of that from Amen, like, I'm really liking what I'm seeing. I felt like a lot of the times, like, last year and his rookie year, you would see, like, the athleticism always flash, but sometimes he'd, like, get ahead of steam towards the basket, and then it would just be, like, a boneheaded turnover, or he'd lose the handle. Those kinds of mistakes are just not happening at the same, like, volume this year, where so often instead we're seeing him keep a tight handle on the ball and just make an incredibly athletic finish at the rim or dunk on someone. Like, he looks so much smoother when he's getting downhill now.
Yeah, he might have not taken, like, that massive offensive leap we've hoped, but he's definitely gotten better offensively. Of course, the Rockets right now, they don't really need it. They're first in offensive rating. We know what he brings defensively. He's, yes, one of the best defenders in the NBA. So I think if he just keeps playing like he is now, that's good enough for this.
Yeah. Another interesting thing has been Amen and Şengün just working better together.
Yeah.
And just Amen's cut game is phenomenal.
Yes.
And so Şengün, who has now become more of a scoring threat, which stretches the defenses, mm-hmm, even further, lets guys like Amen and Tari get behind these defenses through their backdoor cuts and just create easy looks. Mm-hmm. And that's been the biggest thing that has helped them out, because in contrast to last year, they haven't been able to force as much transition plays. Mm-hmm. They're almost second to last in pace right now. And so this,
which
just
is crazy when, yeah, you think about last year where their half court offense was the problem, and now it's like the solution for them.
Yeah.
And I think Şengün, like you were saying, David, like, mm-hmm, we've kind of left the elephant out of the room here. Şengün is the biggest reason for all this stuff of, like, his scoring this year is, like, kind of on another level than what we saw last year, where he maybe regressed a little bit, arguably.
Yeah. Second or first team All-NBA, do we think, for this year?
Second team All-NBA, second, dude. Team. I feel like it's going to happen, probably.
Yeah. Because I guess that's Jokic's to lose, right?
And yeah, he, first team, he ain't no first
and
team.
And, like, it's
All-NBA,
Jokic and baby Jokic. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Real quick, actually, before we move on for the Rockets, and I want to talk about their ceiling, but also I want to throw out a little theoretical here, since, like, guard play is still something they need, and the Mavs are in search of a new GM and probably going to be making some moves here. Rockets fans in the room, let's say theoretically the Mavs call y'all up on the phone and say, give us Jabari and a first and we give you Kyrie Irving. Who says no to that?
Ooh.
Yeah. This was a trade I was thinking about earlier today when I was thinking of how the Mavs might move on from Kyrie potentially if we decide to. And the Rockets are a really interesting destination of Kyrie's played with KD in the past.
Yeah.
He's a great scorer. He's a great playmaker. His biggest weakness is defense, and that's something y'all are lacking a little more this year, but it probably won't be that much of an issue. Could he be the answer to push them over the top?
Yeah, so I guess educate me a little bit. So we get rid of Bari. We have, like, have what does that do for the wing depth then?
I mean, you still have Amen. You still have Sengun, KD. Like, you still have Tari. I think you'd be fine.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess you'd have to rely on Kyrie being able to stay healthy, which is big, because then it's like you're losing out on one of your starting or like fringe like starting guys just to be at the same place you were before. I guess worst case scenario, like if Reed continues playing as good as he has, like he can just fill in whenever Kyrie's not healthy, I suppose, and just, you know, it's we'll continue as they go. Tari hasn't been playing recently, right? He's been out with
just a couple of games. Yeah. But before that, he was playing very well.
Okay. It's an interesting one. I mean, I think the Rockets are going to be in a lot of trade rumors, particularly having to do with guards. So I wouldn't be surprised if we make some sort of move. Would be an interesting one if it is Kyrie again because of his history with KD. And I mean, yeah, Kyrie, like one of the most talented like offensive players of this generation for sure. So could be interesting.
Would be the move. There would also, obviously that trade was just theoretical. There would have to be some salary filler in there for the Rockets to make it match. But yeah.
So what are we looking at just to close out this segment as the team ceiling? Like now that we're a bit more into the season, how do we expect them to fare in the West? Will they be all right in the West, do we think?
They're not as good as Ja and the Grizzlies were back in the day, man. but I don't think they are all right in the West, but I'm going to say something ridiculous. I could see the Rockets knocking off the Thunder in a playoff series based on the way they're playing right now.
What do we see the reason for that being? Like the way that they're off, like is it their offense matching up against like the Thunder, or like what do we think? What do you think gives them the edge in a playoff series?
I think it's just like the half court offense for me right now of like in a playoff series, based on what I've seen from Sengun, KD, like I trust them so much to make things happen for other people. And like, I don't know, the Rockets don't have like a total superpower like you see most championship teams have, or like the Celtics a couple of years ago, it was like every player on the court could drive in and then kick out and make 3-point shots. The Nuggets had like the best passer ever and a bunch of good shooters. Like, the Rockets don't necessarily have one thing, but it seems like they're going to kill you with so many things. With like the offensive rebounding is still such a strength.
Yeah.
And we didn't talk about that much. KD's efficiency this year is like one of the best of his career, which is crazy considering he's arguably the greatest scorer of all time. We talked about the Reed Shepherd shooting leap. Amen Thompson is getting downhill. Like, I just don't know how much you can really take away from this team in a playoff series.
Yeah.
And so the Thunder have one of the best defenses, but it's like, what are they going to take away from the Rockets?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't know.
It's like the good old Hydra saying, you know, cut one head off, two more shall take its place sort of deal, right?
Crazy.
That's in the Captain America movies. It's in the Captain America movies.
All right,
guys.
Buddy. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And yeah, also, I just think, honestly, even though the Thunder have been hooping, I feel like it's going to be the same story we've seen for the past 8 years of teams don't repeat. And with J-Dub being out for so long.
I think that's fair.
I feel like they're relying so heavily on Shea to create right now. Like, in the playoffs, if he falters at all, they're going to be in serious trouble.
So we're saying probably, like, Nuggets, Thunder, Rockets going to be those teams to beat in the West. We think
Timberwolves. But yes.
Not the Timberwolves.
Okay. Yeah.
We're also forgetting to mention the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah, which I'm sure we will talk about plenty on the show. But for now, that will be it for the NBA segment as we move on to our next promo.
Give a manatee gift adoption from Save the Manatee Club. 34 real manatees are up for adoption in their Adopt a Manatee program. Funds help with education and conservation efforts. Each person who adopts receives a full-color photo, biography, adoption certificate, and more. Call toll-free at 1-800-342-JOIN-5646 or visit savethemanatee.org. That's 1-800-432-JOIN or savethemanatee.org. Jacob, let's get some quick hits rolling.
If you've listened to the show, you know the drill. Here's the best haiku you've listened to all week, assuming you're not in poetry unit in AP Lit. They've expressed doubt, hate, fraud. The Seahawks are the real deal. Who cares? We just won. The Rams showcased to the NFL who are the top dogs in the NFC West. They handled business in America's Game of the Week with superb defensive play, getting 4 interceptions off my USC stud, Sam Darnold. Many people claim he isn't fit for the spotlight, But I wouldn't panic just yet, Seattle, as you have JSN, an AI-generated player that can handle the ball in some of the smoothest manners you've seen since prime 2022 Ajax Antony. Will Stafford lead the Rams to a Super Bowl and win his first MVP? Will Sam Darnold get his first playoff win this year? There's still plenty of season left, so stay tuned for the Wild West showdown between these two dogs. Note, this Rams-Seahawks neutrality was not paid by Max Bacerto, but rather out of the kindness of my heart as we approach Thanksgiving. Stay blessed and watch football.
Okay. Wow. That's a counter two now for people saying Ajax instead of Ajax.
Can we talk about the fact that the first line of that haiku had six syllables?
Yeah. Let's stay express, doubt, hate, fraud.
Expressed is two syllables, bro.
Expressed.
Okay. So.
Okay.
That one's going to make it in our end of year episode. All right, episode.
Julian, keep it rolling.
Yeah, so as we move on to the next quick hit, I'm going to give y'all a World Cup qualifying recap as a small preview of our World Cup draw reaction segment in a couple weeks. So, big one, I guess this wasn't World Cup qualifying, but international friendly, the U.S. got a first big win under Mauricio Pochettino with a 5-1 win over Uruguay. These goals included a screamer from Vancouver Whitecaps Sebastian Burhalter, a brace from Orlando City right back Alex Freeman, and a composed finish from Real Salt Lake, Diego Luna. Notice anything? MLS supremacy. Didn't see that one coming. Certainly I didn't. Poch has gotten a lot of heat the last few months, and for this game in particular, over his squad selection. They got to the final but didn't win the Gold Cup over the summer. An unsettled formation in a starting 11 less than a year out from the tournament, and of course the handling of the drama with Christian Pulisic and other U.S. men's national team stars. However, it is starting to come together with this Uruguay win. It's the first time the U.S. have scored five goals versus a World Cup winning side and a top 15 ranked nation in the world. So it's been a pretty good international break that's inspired more confidence. But for the upcoming matches before the World Cup, Portugal and Germany up next. Good luck to the U.S. men's team. Those will be two big tests before we host the World Cup, the big event in June. As for the next story of the World Cup qualifying recap, we have the Sweden bailout with stars like Alexander Isak, Victor Gyökeres, and Lucas Bergvall, and several more. They managed to place last place in their World Cup qualifying group, managed by Graham Potter, largely seen as a Premier League flop. For those non-soccer fans out there, think the Jason Garrett of soccer managers. However, despite all this, Sweden will still somehow get the chance to qualify due to their performance in the UEFA Nations League, which is a different competition where they placed first in that group, and the four highest-ranked first-place nations in that competition that haven't already qualified directly or to the playoffs get to enter the final UEFA qualifying knockout tournament. Sweden is one of those teams, and if you are left confused by that, trust me, I am too. Let's see if they can pull the rabbit out of the hat despite all the underperformance. Next big story, we had Curaçao, who are making their debut in the World Cup as the smallest country to ever qualify. They have a population of 156,000 people, half the size of previous record holder Iceland, and only a few thousand more than Sugarland, Texas population, and for you, Ian, Carmel, Indiana. So... Oh, we cannot hear you, Mr. Producer.
Oh, I accidentally hit my own mute button. Oh, he didn't say this before the show, but my brother was actually born in Carmel.
There you go. So that's how, you know, that to give some perspective. So yeah, Curaçao are a Dutch Caribbean island north of Venezuela and a constituent country under the Kingdom of the Netherlands, not even recognized as a full member state by the United Nations. So they are one of three North American teams to qualify directly to the World Cup. And it'll be a big story for them. Let's see if they can cause some more upsets. Now, for the cinema. Yeah. Yes, exactly. I was cheering that loud too. So, to set the scene for y'all, we have a chilly, wet night in Glasgow, Scotland. Scotland need a win to directly qualify to the World Cup. They draw or lose and they enter the playoff, which essentially means winner takes all. Now, imagine this. Scotland opens the scoring with a bicycle kick from Colt legend Scott McTominay, Manchester United fans cheering all over the world. Denmark strike back, but they get a red card, so Scotland take the lead via a direct corner kick, so straight from the corner spot. But Denmark equalize in the 88th minute, just 2 minutes to go. Scotland are pushing and pushing. They need something to qualify directly until Kieran Tierney, former Arsenal left back, curls in a screamer from 30 yards out, sending all of Scotland into madness. A few more minutes of holding on before they ice it with a goal from the halfway line to make the final score 4-2. For those who didn't watch the game or who weren't aware of this, I strongly suggest watching the highlights on the Scotland National Team YouTube channel. I guarantee you it will be a fun watch. Captain Andy Robertson was saying after the game he couldn't stop thinking of his late teammate Diogo Jota. Jota, he and his brother tragically passed away this summer in a car accident a few weeks after Diogo got married. Robertson was saying that the two teammates used to talk all the time about their dream of qualifying for the World Cup with their respective countries. So a very touching moment there. So yeah, in more ways than one, the Scots have won the hearts of fans around the world. They will certainly have a loud support this upcoming summer. Let's see how they do. On to Seth for the next quick hit.
Yeah, time for some real football. So I don't know how many of our listeners know this, but I am a diehard Minnesota Vikings fan. And this year, the Vikings are so far 4-6 after going 14-3 last year. So what changed for the team? They supposedly got better in the offseason. They signed offensive linemen, defensive linemen, and bolstered the team all around. The only big change they made was at the quarterback position, and they let Sam Darnold go after he collapsed in the final two games of the season and signed the bum J.J. McCarthy. So far, in five games, McCarthy has 9 turnovers, 8 of which are interceptions. He ranks 45th in completion percentage. I don't even know how it's possible. It's last out of all qualified quarterbacks. He's second to last all time in on-target throw rate per PFF this season. He's only ahead of one Anthony Richardson season, and we know Anthony Richardson can't hit the broadside of a barn with a football. And this is all while having some of the best offensive weapons in the league. He has Justin Jefferson, who's the best receiver in the NFL, Jordan Addison, who's like a very good number two, TJ Hawkinson, great tight end, Aaron Jones, great pass-catching back, Jordan Mason, another good back. Even like Jalen Naylor is like good as a wide receiver three. Adam Thielen, old, but catches the ball a lot. And on top of these weapons, he has Kevin O'Connell, who turned Sam Darnold around last year. And look at Sam Darnold this year. He's great. Daniel Jones signed with the Vikings at the end of last year to learn under Kevin O'Connell. And this year, he's like an MVP candidate. Kirk Cousins had some of his best seasons ever under Kevin O'Connell. Even the Pastrnak, Josh Dobbs, he was good under Kevin O'Connell. But our 11th overall pick, J.J. McCarthy, sucks under him. So he's just garbage, and he makes it worse because he's like weird. He calls himself 9. He's his alter ego. He says, I call him 9. So first of all, he's talking in third person, which is like, what are we doing? And then it's unique. I love feeding that wolf. He literally saying he has a wolf inside of him. Like, he's horrible at football. He's embarrassing the state of Minnesota, and he's injury prone. He missed all of last season, missed 2 games this year. Like, you can be one of those, maybe, but you can't be all three. So in the offseason, this Vikings team is not getting any younger. I'm usually not very overreactionary, but we need to move on from him because he's garbage. So with that, let's kick it to Garrett for some predictions.
Wow.
Very, wow. Very, yeah, let's give a round of applause for that. Impassioned take from Seth, man. You know, 9's just a different animal, and I think you got to let those wolves inside of them cook. But great analysis there. Let's move it on. Our final segment of the week, getting into predictions. First off, speaking of Daniel Jones, we've got the Colts and the Chiefs this Sunday at noon. Seth, who are you going with?
Give me the Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes over Daniel Jones all day.
I'm taking the Colts on this one.
This is a must-win game for the Chiefs. Give me the Chiefs.
Give me Indiana Jones.
My Colts have been the better team this year, and I'm a believer. This year is our year. Give me INDY and Indiana Jones.
Fun fact, these are the two teams I hate the most in the league. Unfortunately, I cannot doubt the Chiefs until I see it happen in actual time. Give me the Chiefs.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Julian. I don't think the Chiefs fall to 5-6, so I'll take Kansas City. All right, moving to the NBA. Our Rockets play the Nuggets tonight in the NBA Cup. Who do you got, Seth?
I cannot glaze Jokic enough. Give me the Nuggets.
I'm right behind you, Seth. I'm taking the Nuggets.
Just give me the Rockets.
Reed Shepard, 50 bomb incoming.
I'm also a believer in Reed Shepard. I'm buying the Rockets hype from the previous segment. Give me the Rockets.
I love Reed Shepard, but I'll go with something a little bit more realistic. Jabari Smith 50 bomb. And give me the Rockets as well.
Baby Jokic isn't going to be so baby after this week. I'm taking Şengün Dengün all over the Nuggets. All right. Final pick of the week. Everyone is going with an underdog, so someone that is at least plus 200 according to odds. Who do you have, Seth, as your underdog of the weekend?
Primetime matchup, 2-8 Sam Houston State on the road at Middle Tennessee State. Sam Houston's plus 200, but they're on a two-game win streak. Give me the Bearcats.
Nice. Just for clarification, that's football?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this is football.
All right, I'm taking the Trailblazers over the Warriors. They are plus 340. Last time the Trailblazers took the Warriors, they won by like 30.
I would like to shout out Brandon. Thank you for choosing USC to beat Oregon. Probably will happen. Maybe not, but we'll see. Anyways, my prediction for all my brothers out there back at home, all the people that go to UCR, I will be taking UC Riverside over San Diego Toreros in men's basketball.
To counter that point, I'm taking the Bucks over the Rams.
I am taking my hometown Nebraska Cornhuskers. Yeah. Scarlet and the Cream are going to march into Happy Valley in Pennsylvania, ruin the Whiteout fans, all 106,000 of them. TJ Lateef is the truth, filling in for the injured Dylan Raiola. This year is our year. Matt Rhule is him. It's never been a better time to be a Husker fan. That's not true, but it might be true in my lifetime.
Baby Mahomes, I like that. I also like the Bucks over the Rams pick, David. I will always hate on the Rams if I get the chance. Sticking in the NFL, MJ and I have the same pick. We have the Panthers over the 49ers at plus 290. Should be a very important matchup in the NFC.
And I'll finish it up. I'm going to stay basic here and give me Missouri plus 200 over Oklahoma on the road. John Mateer, you're the guy, but you're not going to be the guy on Saturday. And that wraps it up for the week here on K-True. We will be off next week. I'm sorry, all you crayon eaters. You're just going to have to listen to the old episodes. Thanksgiving holidays next Thursday. And so we were not back on the air until December 6th. If you must miss us in the meantime, go back and stream those old episodes by searching for K-True Sports on iHeartRadio, Spotify, or for some reason, Amazon Music. To stay in the loop, go ahead and follow us at ktru.sports on Instagram. And make sure you don't miss anything happening on Against the Grain. We will see you again at our usual time, bright and early, 7 a.m. Saturday, December 6th, right here on K-True 96.1 FM. Until then, enjoy some stuffing, enjoy some mashed potatoes, and enjoy some football. Let's have a great week.